This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Welcome back to Push Our Recaps Theater. My name is Ariel, and I am hungry. I'm so excited to be here talking about The Menu, and I am joined by one of my table mates. It's Grace, my co-host. What's up, Grace?
Are you picking up the bill for this? Because it's very expensive.
Yeah, we'll get into the price, because I was like $12.50. It can't just be $1,200. Like, it has to be super expensive.
It's low. $12.50, which is out of my budget.
Yeah, I only like paying for $9 burgers.
Yeah. I hope it's okay. I invited another member of our work crew. I know our boss, I know, owns the restaurant that we're going to, but I've invited a third. That's okay. They don't take singles. They won't take single reservations, but they will take triple reservations, which is great.
Fine.
I think this movie is actually a perfect fit for our guest, because this person is not only a foodie. You might have heard them on the Great British Baking wrap up and other food shows, but also I know is a big escape room fan. And this movie gets very escape roomy as well. So it's a mixture of being a foodie and escape room fan. The wonderful Kurt Clark is here. Kurt, how you doing?
Good. I just realized, I think this might be the first ever movie I've ever podcasted about. It's always been TV series and questionable ones at that. So I'm hoping that the ear feel that I bring to the podcast isn't too offensive. But
the ear feel created from your mouth feel.
Exactly.
Just make sure you're not taking pictures of us the whole time. That would be good.
Screen grab.
Yeah. Make sure you're not doing that. But do make sure to subscribe to the podcast feed. PushOurRecaps.com/movies is the URL for your podcast catcher needs. Search Push Our Recaps Theater wherever you get your podcasts. Rate, review us. It's very helpful. We have a fancy new logo on Apple. It's very nice. I'm very excited. Mm-hmm. The Menu. I have to say, when I saw the teaser many, many months ago. As we all know, I think if we go to the movies, we have seen...
I think it's called an appetizer.
An amuse-bouche. We have seen this campaign go grow and grow in many months, and we've seen this trailer a lot. But when I first saw it, I was like, wow, if this movie can be like almost as good as the vibes I'm getting from that trailer, I'd be very happy. And I got to say, for me, it got pretty close. I'm excited to talk about it. Kurt, what were your like... up top, non-spoilery thoughts to start out with about the whole experience?
Definitely. Like you, I saw the trailer, it feels like several months ago. I haven't been to the actual theaters a lot, so I can't remember which. It actually might have been when I think the last movie I saw in theaters was the Escape Room Tournament of Champions. So it may have been during that. It's funny you bring up escape rooms earlier. It may have been during that that I saw like a teaser trailer for it. But I'm also the type of person where once I get interested in seeing a movie, I try to avoid further content. So like if I'll speed past the previews on TV or go put my fingers in my ears and go la 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 if just I don't want to hear anything more. So for me, I didn't know what to expect much other than I like food, I like horror thrillers, and I liked this. So I was actually very, very pleased.
It sounds like you enjoyed your culinary experience. What about you, Grace?
I have been very much looking forward to this movie. It's in the vein of, there's a lot of movies that are coming out or have come out, including Triangle of Sadness, Don't Worry, Darling, I think sort of fits into this. Is it like, hey, guess what? Rich people are not great, is like a little bit of the theme.
Breaking news.
Of the fall. There's been a lot of that. There's two themes this fall, Ariel. There is rich people are bad, or there's like movies are pretty good, huh? There's like Fablemans and Empire of Light is coming. And there's two movies that are like do the exact same thing, where they like explain how movies work, and that like if you make the images go faster than our brains can comprehend, like that's how movies work. And so yeah, it's either like movies are good and rich people are bad. We've all agreed on in like this very divisive time in the world. Yeah, and then horror and then superheroes. These are all the things we've agreed on that will like that's what we'll go watch in the movies. So I think in some ways, unfortunately, this movie does have to like live up to, I wouldn't worry about Don't Worry, Darling. Also, fortunate news about,
do worry about that.
Harry and Olivia, they're taking a break. I do think this movie does sort of have to, unfortunately, it doesn't have to, but I compare a little bit to Triangle of Sadness, but it's doing something that's different. This is much more, comedy. Like I definitely felt the comedy in this movie, which I think for me knocks it down a little bit of a peg. I still really liked it, but I think I need to like go and rewatch it knowing it's fully a comedy the whole time for me to I think like reappreciate it, because I think for me I did really like it, and there's a lot of stuff in here I really really like. But I was saying to someone yesterday that I feel like the more I walked away from this movie, actually kind of the less I liked it. And not that it was bad. It's definitely not bad. It's definitely good. It's just different than what I thought. It's definitely a black comedy film.
And I think when I was buying the ticket, all I really saw was thriller / comedy. So I was like, oh, okay. So it's going to be, and I definitely was, I think I saw it at about 5 o'clock yesterday. And it was Not a full theater, maybe about 30 people in there. So still pretty, good for relatively early on a Friday. But there were definitely points in there where I think I was the only person who was like giving the quick laugh. Me and like one other person a row in front of me, like we're laughing at all the same things, which made me feel good. But I also need to go back and listen to, and watch it, because there are all sorts of like little side comments from people who weren't necessarily on screen that you'd pick up just kind of like incidentally that if you missed them, you didn't get all of the, you didn't get to savor the entire course of the film too.
Yeah. Like, I think like some of these courses that they're eating in the movie after it like sits on your palate a little bit, maybe there's the aftertaste changes a little bit. I mean we'll get into the cast specifically and a lot of call outs, a lot of heavy hitters obviously to talk about and appreciate. I was looking for something completely twisted, and that's what I got. Like Ralph Fiennes, He Who Must Not Be Named himself playing the chef, Slowik, I think, and Anya Taylor-Joy, and Hong Chow and Nicholas Hoult, I could go down the list. It's a lot of people having fun, which I always appreciate when you can tell that or at least from my perspective, the actor is having a lot of fun. And I kind of got exactly what I wanted selfishly. You go to the restaurant and the kind of burger you want, or the kind of foam sea algae thing that you want to taste and you want to experience it, and this came pretty close. And honestly, if you have Judith Light in any movie, I'm probably gonna like it more than a movie without her. Although arguably criminally underused here, but it's fine.
I agree. I love Judith Light, and I was like, I want more of Judith Light. Yeah.
I didn't even realize it was her. Like she comes down the thing, and it wasn't until she sat at the restaurant I was like, oh my god, that's Judith Light. Like I had the moment of the people in the beginning being starstruck, but with just the Judith Light.
Yeah, I think this is the first time I've seen her in anything literally since Who's the Boss, except for there was like a second season episode of American Horror Stories, though with I was like, oh, okay. So it wasn't a complete shock to me, but having had her seen her in just that one thing recently, but it was like, oh, nice to see you, Angela.
She's really good in Transparent, which is like a show that I don't think holds up, but like she's super good in it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she was very good in it. I remember that. I mean, I think for the most part, we enjoyed the experience perhaps of the movie. I can say that. And I don't know. I think people should, in my opinion, people should go see it.
Yeah, go watch it.
It's worth a fun, you know, now that the holidays are coming up and people are going to need stuff to do, fill up the days and Thanksgiving and all that in the US. This is a pretty good one.
And I know it's a little bit more limited. Sorry, Kurt. I know it's a little bit more limited, but my theater was packed. I saw it like the 7 p.m. showing. So I actually think there's a chance that it actually expands into more theaters and actually will become a little bit more widely available. So if you're like thinking like, oh, I'd love to watch it, but it's not really like playing anywhere near me, I would actually just like wait. Like, don't actually like come back to this pod because I think it's... I do think part of the fun of the movie is like how unexpected some of this stuff is. So I would like encourage people not to listen to our podcast until you've actually seen the movie. And I kind of expect that it will like have a little bit of a run in theaters, I think.
Hoping so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little bit, I don't know, like a movie, like not the same genre at all, but like the way that Smile kind of just kept going and kept like building word of mouth. This movie could have like a similar trajectory. Mm-hmm. It did make me smile, this movie.
Yeah.
But not in that creepy way. So I mean, I guess this is spoiler time. We've mm-hmm. given our non-spoilery takes. And if you don't want to be spoiled on what the meal actually is, or what the menu rather actually is, then this is your time to leave. I will now spill as artfully as possible into some flowers, the PSRT, and go into a quick recap of the movie plot. So we meet Tyler and his girlfriend, played by Nicholas Holt, and not Margot Robbie. It's Anya Taylor-Joy, and they're going to this exclusive restaurant on an island operated by celebrity chef Julian Slowick, who I already said is Ralph Fiennes, and it's on a private island. And other guests we meet are this food critic, Lillian Bloom, her editor, a wealthy couple, older couple, Judith Light being the woman in that couple, and then a movie star, his assistant, and some business bros is how I can accurately put it, three of them. So they meet Elsa, who is the restaurant captain, the right hand of the chef, and she is no bullshit from the beginning, played by Hong Chau, who I love.
It was so good.
And she clocks, a weird thing happens where it's important to the plot because she clocks that Tyler has brought Margot, who is played by Anya Taylor-Joy again, but Margot isn't his original guest, and they keep calling her by Miss, I think it's Miss Everwater or Miss Clearwater, something like that, that isn't her name. And it's a little awkward because obviously that's not who he brought. But Tyler is a super foodie. He's going to be that annoying guy who's trying to take pictures for Instagram, and he won't let her touch the food until that. But he's into all of this. He loves the chef. He's like clearly almost like, it's almost like a cult for him, frankly, like the way he operates and the way that he just worships the chef. And yeah, for him, it's like a religious experience, basically. So speaking of the chef, he gives like these monologues before all of his courses, and they slowly become like more and more creepy. And then I think the movie really takes off and like goes into, I don't know, the final frontier of like the thing that they've been teasing and like the trailers and how is this actually going to turn? I think the whole time there's this feeling of something's probably going to go wrong. I think the music in the beginning is very disquieting, discomforting. And there's a sous chef who dies by shooting himself all of a sudden in the restaurant and causing a panic. And it's very intentional, clearly, that the chef planned for this to happen and basically orders this to happen. And then they serve food right after this has happened. So it's like people are freaked out, obviously. And the chef Slowick is like, this is all part of the menu. It's fine. But then it's revealed that all the night's guests were chosen for reasons and that they're told that they're going to die, basically. And again, even still, like, I think as an audience, you are just like the people kind of wondering what is real here. And like, is this part of the act? And is, you know, are these people actually going to die? Are they in danger? And there's like an escalation kind of, and another course called Men's Folly. The male guests are given 45 seconds to escape, but are all caught. And then separate from this, the chef is having private conversations with Anya Taylor-Joy's character, Margot, which isn't her name, we find out, but he recognizes that she's not supposed to be here. And obviously he planned this menu for these guests, and like seemingly we find out like a punishment for these guests and all the things that they've done either to him or around him or to the culture at large as he sees it. And He gives her an opportunity to choose. Like, he's like, are you one of them, those people, like the guests, or are you one of us? Because he recognized that she's like a service industry worker. And we find out that she was an escort hired by Tyler. And that's why clearly things didn't work out with him and his whatever ex-girlfriend. We're not sure, but the woman he was supposed to bring. So he brought Margot instead. In the end, we actually find out that he knew that this was all going to happen, and he was told by Chef Slowik over a period of time, months, that they were all there to die, and because he is like this acolyte, he was all about it. And when Margot punches him in the face, it was like, yeah, he totally deserved that because you brought me here to die. But because Margot had joined the ranks of the chefs, basically, at Chef Slowik's like insistence for her to like choose a side, he sends her to his house to retrieve something. She sees this picture of him when he was a much younger chef, first starting out, and I think it was 87, the year that I clocked, and he was making burgers. It was like his first job, ostensibly. And then she's basically able to outsmart Chef Slowik by like telling him that his food is terrible and like openly mocking him in front of people, but then challenging him to just make something super basic for her to satisfy her hunger, because obviously as a chef, that's something he would want to do. And he makes her this, like, what I was struck by was how beautiful this moment was, but like he made her like a really classic burger, which is what she ordered. She's like, American cheese, I don't want any of that fancy stuff. And he makes it for her lovingly for the first time, I think, more than any other course that he's already made, and makes it himself. And then she orders it to go. She's like, could I take this to go? And then that's how she escapes the island, basically. He hesitates, but he allows her to leave. She gets on a boat. She leaves. And then he redefines what s'mores means. And he makes everyone put on like these marshmallow jackets. And he basically lights the whole room on fire, including himself, including the staff. And the whole thing blows up. And that's the end of the movie.
Yeah. Yep.
What an incredible journey. Grace, yeah. What do you think? Do you like s'mores? Will you still eat them?
No, I hate s'mores. I do not like s'mores at all. And I think he's totally right that they are they're a waste of time.
Like subpart chocolate, industrial grade graham crackers. I loved his description of the s'more.
It was incredible.
I hate that.
Oh well, and as a person who spent a lot of time at camps, Grace, being like a camp counselor, I'm sure you had to deal with them a lot.
Yeah, s'mores suck. They're hard to make. As a camp counselor, you're like with like, you know, 10, 8-year-old kids who are like trying to make s'mores, and it's just like a mess. And then they're not that good. They're too much work for being not that good.
I'm guessing you were dodging just like flaming white spheres, like the entire time. But I think he also made the point at the end that's like, but it's these really shitty ingredients that through fire become something beautiful. So I think at the end he was trying to actually make kind of a case for s'mores, but I wasn't entirely sure. I need to watch it again.
Rising from the ashes.
Exactly.
Elsa makes a comment that they never burn anything unless it's on purpose. So it's very fitting at the end.
Clocking that at the moment, but then completely forgetting about it. Being like, oh, that's probably a thing. And then I didn't put it together. So kudos to you.
So my thought in the movie is I like most of what's happening here. I like this idea that the chef feels that all these different people, in some ways I feel like the thing that made it a little bit unexpected for me is that I thought it was going to be this, like, I thought it was a searing take on capitalism in the same way that like Triangle of Sadness is really about all of these different wealthy people. Mm-hmm. This movie is much more about Slowick's personal sort of vendetta against everybody who he's brought to this dinner. And like, yes, they do need to be like rich enough to do it. And he's like the most psychotic probably of them all is this person who runs this incredibly like this restaurant that only people who have like can afford to pay $1,200 for like a dinner can come and attend. And so I think the part that I need to like sit with and figure out if I really like is like John Leguizamo, his character. Really, we find out that the reason he's here is because Slowik didn't like one movie.
the one day he had off in months, and he wasted it.
It was a Sunday.
It was a Sunday, and he wasted it on this guy's movie. That
something Dr. Sunshine. Catching Dr. Sunshine? It was something like that.
Like the like, what did Judith Light's character do? Did I miss what her, like, I guess they come a lot. They come to the restaurant a lot. And
yes.
Recall the food.
The great thing about the couple, because this was a question I had. So going into it, you're like, okay, these bad things start to happen. Does he do this every night? Like, how are they still in business? This doesn't make any sense.
No.
But clearly this has been like a slow building reaction that Chef Slowik is having of like, I've had enough. Now I need to like take back my power or fight back or like do one last, like I've had enough. I need to end this thing, because that couple that you're referencing, Grace, Judith Light's character and Reed Birney's character, Richard and Anne, they've come like 10 or 11 times. And their cardinal sin is that they can't name a single dish. I mean,
he's
he
like,
can't.
Cod. He's like, it's
he can't. She tried. Yeah. She said cod, and he said no.
Does it matter? Well, if you're the halibut,
it was smart. Halibut. You, what did he call them? You dog. I can't remember. He refers to them kind of like an animal. It was such a funny insult. But also, to your point, it was just like ridiculous. Which just, I guess, speaks to like what I said. Of he has had enough, so now he's being unreasonable and he's kind of snapped and he's going to make these people pay for what he sees as these egregious crimes, like making a terrible movie. But it's obviously ridiculous.
Like, I was trying to figure out what John Leguizamo's like assistant's like crime was. I mean, we knew that she was taking money from him, but how did that like ultimately like impact the chef?
I guess you have to bring a guest, right?
Because you can't
come alone. So
except his mom. His mom.
Except his mom, who ruined his life. And it's like, and then I kept thinking that she was being drugged because she was drinking. And then she kind of passed out. I guess she's just old. That kind of makes sense.
Well, because they said that this is for 12 people. And the entire time I'm like, I was early stages of the movie. I count 11. And it's like, I noticed that Judith Light and her husband were missing on the walk, to the restaurants, but they were there later. But I was like, but there's just 11 people. And then there's the lonely woman in the corner. So,
Yeah, so like I feel like some of the reasons why people are there to not work super well for me. And also I think like fully dressing them up as s'mores, I think is the other piece that like, I'm not sure it actually, like them being like in melted chocolate, hats and marshmallow shirts. Like, I don't know. It's like, it's fine. But
it was too much like Midsommar for you.
I remember in Midsommar when they wore marshmallow shirts. That was wild. But there is stuff in here that I think is like super good. And so I actually think that like honing in a little bit, even on like Tyler, Margot and Slowik, that whole thing and Elsa is like, to me, really the best part of the movie by far. So because it's Tyler is such a buffoon from early on. But when you find out that it's much more sinister, like that he knows that he's bringing Margot to die that's you can't come back from that, Tyler. Like I can't think of you as a buffoon anymore. You're like evil that you brought Margot along. You actually paid for this escort to come with you to this dinner, knowing like just because you wouldn't be seated alone, just because you couldn't come and enjoy the meal. And so the whole scene where he's forced to cook because Slowik also wants to sort of expose the difference between like a foodie and an actual chef, and he makes him cook. I will say I also didn't like the stylistic choice of the cut screens to the food. So like the food, like the way on a TV show you'd see the food is like
right, the close up with the food of the description and the ingredients.
Except, and part of it is like I did like the like Tyler's bullshit joke. Like it, but part of me feels like all of that, those choices to like do that. It's like, yes, it's like exactly what you see in every like cooking show and foodie show, but also it really felt like to service that particular joke. I guess the joke at the end too, where it's like s'mores and it's like the ingredients include like the staff. Guests and restaurant. So
on the Top Chef podcast that I co-host, my job on that podcast is to, as we're watching every episode of the season, I'm the one that goes in an Excel sheet online or Google sheet, whatever. I'm the one that records the names. Like I'm the one that pauses it on that screen and then transcribes it for everybody. So I actually appreciated that. And there's like the little jokes in there. I did appreciate. So I thought that was that to me, that helped me understand what kind of movie I was watching. It was not going to be taking itself seriously, and really, really, those breakouts I did enjoy. But the you know, going back to your comment about capitalism, like I was taking away something from like the whole thing about givers versus eaters. Yes. To me was very close to that. And it's funny, I guess it started out as givers versus takers, and then takers kind of transformed into eaters. And one of the other one of the food podcasts I listened to called The Sporkful, they bill themselves as, "We're not for foodies, we're for eaters." And I've always kind of identified with that as an eater can get the joy out of, you know, some of the things that would have been on this menu tonight, as well as from a quarter pounder with cheese. So I was starting to be taken a little bit aback when eaters was used pejoratively. And I was like, but I like the double cheeseburger too.
Yeah.
But what about the eating part?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't eat, savor. Enjoy.
Yeah, jeez. And then later, and he's like, "You're not eating," and she's like, "You told us not to eat."
Yes, I was like, "Yes, got him."
He's like, "You know, that's not what I meant." Yeah. I mean, a lot of the, I do think like more so than like him trying to just like, it doesn't, these are the worst people, and these are people who have personally offended him in some way, right? Because even the couple, like they come a lot, but also like he's cheating on her, right? So like they can be bad people, but it's almost like more important that they offended him in some way. And to me, in many ways, it actually like there's a world where like Sok is a little bit of like an Armand from White Lotus. Like I feel like the thing that I think White Lotus and Triangle of Sadness and this movie are more like it is capitalism, but it's also through the lens in which like there's a way in which they're trying to make it personal, and the way they do that is through the service workers, right? That is like the big theme, right? He's saying to Margot, like, are you with them? Like, are you here to just like, you know, take advantage of us, or are you a giver as part of the service? And I actually thought the reveal that she is an escort, I thought like worked tremendously well in terms of that being a different type of like service industry. And yet that they're like still, he's like bonded to her, and actually her being the only one to like actually get out, I thought was really clever. Yeah, I mean, it's much, you know, the big difference I think between those two and this, I guess Triangle of Sadness definitely has, it's actually like the service workers are tiered a little bit. I don't want to like spoil that movie too much, but there's like,
right. Yeah. But like a ship, like the way a ship is tiered. Mm-hmm. A ship's crew is tiered.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess it says it too with like there's like Slowik, and then there's like the rest of the people in the.
There's certainly the way they treat Slowik, the service workers, and like yell back at them. It's very militant. But you mentioned,
"We love you, chef.
We love you, chef." Incredible. But you mentioned Chef Slowik's connection and kind of bond to Margot. I'm sure she tells us her real name, and I can't remember it now. In that one scene where she's smoking her cigarette like a badass.
Aaron.
I believe it's Aaron. Yeah. It was Aaron. And I thought their conversations were some of the most interesting parts of the movie.
Agreed.
Like you said, Grace, when he recognizes something in her that like you know, and at first you're like, oh, she's been a restaurant worker, and then it's like, no, that's not it, but it's no less the service industry, like you said. And then that he would then, and even before that conversation, when she's trying to smoke in the bathroom, I just realized she smokes twice in this movie. When she's trying to smoke in the bathroom,
cool smoking, it's very cool smoking,
and it's very cool, of course, it's Anya Taylor-Joy, everything she does is amazing. But he clearly is conflicted in that bathroom scene. He says to her, "You shouldn't be here." And at that point, you're kind of wondering, okay, clearly, or at least I was wondering, something seems to be happening and he has this plan, but now she is kind of affecting his resolution to go through with it. So does that mean that maybe she's worth, or he recognizes that she's worthy or unworthy in some way? So it was so interesting to see him kind of work through his, I guess, virtues, his like conviction of how far he was willing to go with this thing. And, you know, ultimately he does let her go. So I think it all kind of rings true in the end, but super compelling, like Ralph Fiennes and Anya Taylor-Joy, just like a joy to watch act against each other.
Mm-hmm. And I think there was something towards the end where, and I could have been kind of misreading this, but you know, he was positioned, Chef was.
Yes, Chef.
Yes, clap. he was positioning as givers versus takers. And I think, you know, at the, towards the end, right as, you know, he's engaging with Aaron, you know, she brings up the point that it's almost like he's not a giver as much as he's a maker. It feels like his passion is towards the creating of something and he doesn't care if it brings joy.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the main point she was making to him towards the end. It's like, you made this food. None of it brought me joy. None of this was cooked with heart. Even your hot food was cold. I thought was a great like line.
Yeah.
That he said.
I was like, ooh, got him.
Yes, got him. And then, you know, and we goes back to when she kind of finds that hidden room in his house, or locked room in his house, where he grew up as a burger flipper. And I think she just kind of hung on to that as, you know, there was a point where he looked happy and this brought him, bringing joy to others brought him joy. And now he just seems tortured. So I think just the fact that there's this distinction between giving and making, and kind of keeping your audience in mind, that was, I need to see it again to figure out what that commentary exactly was.
Well, when he's yelling at the like angel investor, right, who he drowns with wings on.
Oh yeah,
he's
yeah.
yelling about how that guy always wants substitutions, and he's like, so many. He's like, we don't do substitutions, you know. But then like Anya Taylor-Joy, right? But then Anya, like Margo is being like, can I get a burger, right? And I do, I really do like. I don't know if I like, can I get it to go? Like, if it's a little. I mean, it's very funny, but it's also like, I don't know, it's very cutesy.
I just love that they, it's kind of like now they are between the, and yes, it's a little advanced for how long they've known each other, but like they almost have the shorthand because they have had these private conversations, and she is able to glean that from the picture and kind of just, she's taking a risk ultimately, right? Because she doesn't know that it's going to work. She's just like, this is all I have. This is all the information I have. So I'm just going to try to wield it. And she clearly knows people very well and deals with different kinds of people. That's and true. Kind of is put in a lot of situations, I imagine, unfortunately, where she has to, you know, kind of be careful and analyze this, the parameters of the person she's dealing with, a man in a lot of power, right? In this case. And I think, it was really, again, because they're so great acting against each other, when she wields that power and it's like, burger, please. Like you said, Kurt, that she saw the joy on his face and that she's able to use that word. I think obviously is very intentional, and take it to go. I was like, oh, can she? Will he allow her? I was like, I was very, very anxious for her. And I think it was that part plays beautifully and then you see all the emotions on his face where he's like, do I dare? Can I? He's like clenching his teeth. He's like, is this okay? Is she breaking the rules?
Mm-hmm. On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time. Apes hunt humans. That is wrong. For your king. Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
I didn't love the Coast Guard scene. I felt like if this movie is bloated at any point in the movie, it's the Coast Guard coming up and doing the double, like the reveal that he's actually a chef. But that's fine. I did really love the men's folly chorus. I feel like a little bit like this is where big on the like trailers give too much away, because we see a lot of the funny stuff, but I actually think there actually is a little bit more in terms of like when all the female guests go back in. So there's a few things is that they try to convince her like, okay, like, will you help us? And she's like, no, it's my idea that everyone dies. I think this is
yeah,
like, be a masterpiece.
Chef, the female sous chef. Yeah.
She's so friggin' proud. But also when she stabs a Slowick, right, because he kept trying to like attempt to get with her and she kept having to deny him, and I really liked that stuff. Yeah. I liked Tyler coming back in and being like, what'd you guys get, and like
and then trying to grab it like the most rude person.
I did like that scene,
the continued jealousy between that he perceived Chef's relationship with Margot was amazing. Like every time she got pulled, it's not fair that you got pulled back into the kitchen. What did you get?
Yeah, what'd you get?
And now that you mention it, it makes so much sense because he had been having these private communications with Chef. So in his mind, he's like, wait, why are you now getting special treatment? Right. I thought I was the special child. So that, of course, would just make him so much jealous, so much more jealous. But God, great. So when he grabs the food, when he comes back in after the sprint,
what did you guys get?
He literally like leaps over the stairway.
Oh, yeah.
One of the other jokes that I thought worked really well was, so there's two sort of relationships that I thought were really good in this movie, which is I really liked Lisa Bloom and Ted. And so Ted just being such the like, I think she says, what is it called, Kurt? What broke? What is the thing?
Oh, the emulsion. Broke? The emulsion,
yes.
Broke. The emulsion.
And he's like, I noticed as soon as they put the plate down. you buffoon. He's such like a buffoon. Yeah.
I invented it. Invented that. And the fact that then they keep bringing her like bigger bowls emulsion, it's of broken emulsion, and it gets like bigger and bigger. It's hilarious.
But also every time she makes a point about food, and he'll like start to say something, and then she'll say something, and he completely contradicts himself. It's so funny. Yeah. I thought that was good. And then I also think Elsa with the like bro boys was really funny as well. Yeah. All the time she's just like putting the napkin back on his like on the seat, or bring, like, I'll get your chair, and bringing it, and just like quietly escorting them back to their death is like so good.
The whole sequence with the laser printed tortillas.
And they
get like the it shows it's laser prints of like them transferring
the wire
money.
Transfers.
Yeah, so like illegally.
Fake invoices. Yeah,
and he's like, where did you get this? And she's like, the chef doesn't like to talk about his recipes. And she just used that line like three consecutive times.
No,
she's
the
like,
best is, what is this? She goes, it's a tortilla.
It's tortilla. Exactly. And then she repeats it. He's like, no, what is this?
Delicioso.
It's so good. It's so good. I love Hong Chao. The bros are insufferable. But super, super entertaining. And one of them gets a birthday. One of them gets a blowout birthday candle.
The birthday cake thing also shouldn't have been in the trailer because it's so funny.
No, I agree. I agree. Because even by that point in the trailer, you see that they needed to like digitally edit out the blood on his face at least.
Yes.
Because then, you clearly know when you're watching the trailer that like things have already happened and he has to have like gone through stuff to feel this way. So.
And he just says like the thing that you'd say at any restaurant is, did you tell them it was my birthday?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Like, right,
like,
exactly.
But that would have belonged in an Olive Garden or
But
so the fact that like that's a line that everyone can relate to.
It seemed funny 3 hours ago. The food critic, again, like you said, Grace, really funny, and just that she's getting her like her printouts on the tortillas are like places that she shut down. Like at first, it's presented as places that
she's reviewed
had closed that she reviewed, but it's not like complete. And then eventually, it's like, oh, it seems like they might have closed because of your reviews. That's pretty. I mean, I gotta say, this technology, this is cutting edge, right, Kurt? Like, do we see this on the shows, on the Top Chefs and whatnots?
No.
Yeah. Why
am I trying to think that I did see a machine that you could like put in an image and it would put that in the foam on your coffee? I do I do think that is a thing.
Yes. We can get it on cakes. We can get it on coffee.
What was the machine that Nicholas Holt's character kept referring to? Like, did you use that? Did you use a blank to make? But anyway, it ends up being used to
as a weapon for Margot to literally kill Elsa in self-defense because Elsa is jealous that Margot's going to replace her.
Yeah.
Which, like, you're all going to die. Why do you think you're going to be replaced? And why does it matter?
Did you get the sense that when she goes to get the barrel, when she goes, this is, and then she has the fight with Elsa, one of the things that I don't think I haven't figured out yet is why is it a recreation of the restaurant, in his like bedroom, essentially. That's what it is, right? It's like his like house, because she sticks into his house. Yeah. So why is it a recreation of the restaurant in his house? What does that say about him? Or
maybe it's like the rehearsal, the HBO show where he has to just like.
This is a Nathan Fielder project.
Yes.
It's like chefs of his caliber like have to like live
in the kitchen.
Yeah, exactly. Because like it's basically the chairs were there, the kitchen was there, the silver door was there.
Yeah.
But the. There's just an addition of a bed, right?
Right.
Yeah. We still don't know what was behind the silver door.
And a fight to the death.
Yeah. In the kitchen, in the restaurant, we don't know.
In the actual restaurant, we don't know what was behind that silver door.
Right. Because is she even able to open the one at the fake restaurant? That one might just be.
Yes, that's where she finds the radio and his.
Oh, that's the entrance to his room. That's right. I was like, mm-hmm. Is that superficial? But no, it's his room with all his little cutouts. I was shocked that that he had anything up on the wall, but that, you know, that was humanizing, I guess. His newspapers, which honestly have been reprinted because the newspaper from the 80s is not gonna look that good at this point.
Kurt, can I ask you a question? Out of all of these courses, which one do you most want?
I definitely want no bread.
No bread? The breadless bread? That's pretty good.
I mean, the chicken breast looked good. I mean, it was a setup that was kind of horrifying. And,
oh, yeah.
And I guess it was technically a callback to that when the female chef stabbed him in the thigh with kitchen scissors, right?
That is right. That is true. Yes.
But I think the only one that was really without, like, some sort of creepy tinge to it was the amuse-bouche with the cucumber and melon and the milk foam and the
right. Oh, so I'm getting goat. I'm getting goat from
getting,
that.
Yes.
the meal that looked the best is, other than the fact that a sous chef just killed himself on the floor. That one looked really good.
Oh, that first, plate. Is that the ground one?
That's good. Like there's like a literal bone. Like they have like
the bone marrow.
The meat in the bone marrow. Yeah.
The mess.
Wow. Yeah. Was it ever? I think Kurt, you mentioned earlier of like being one of the only person that laughed. When I saw the scissor, so the chef is telling the story of like how his mom stabbed him in the thigh.
No, he stabbed his dad in the thigh,
right? Like to protect his mom. And then they cut to the chickens being chicken thighs being. And I said, I just cackled out loud, and I was the only one because it's just so. I love like a well executed stupid joke like that. It was perfect.
My theater had a spattering of laughs, like I think all throughout, but definitely like quieter than I definitely could notice that I was laughing more than many people, but there are people laughing with me. So
I was trying to figure out in the dark theater, like when the lights came back on at the end, like, you know, where's the person that was laughing at all the same things that I did? Is this a cosmic connection?
Right. Am I holding up a mirror? Yeah. It's hard to pick a favorite dish. I don't know, definitely not Tyler's terrible dish when he was chopping those. I was like, oh god, this knife. I've only seen a few seasons
and
of Top
lamb
Chef,
and
but
butter.
Even I knew this knife work is horrible. This is
that is a good line.
The running commentary.
Yes.
Oh, leeks, shallots, and butter. We're breaking culinary ground here for everybody.
A new chopping technique that we've not used before.
He's just like hacking off a corner of a stick of butter. And
I do think this movie will be worth a rewatch because there is to the point of like Little Lions, one of my favorites that like I don't think everyone caught is Richard. We haven't even talked that Richard gets his finger cut off for trying to leave.
We haven't talked about that.
Yeah, he's the first one. He's the first one that tries to leave.
They also put whoever the angel investor is, whatever, his fingers are in the gift bags at the end. I do also the sommelier gets a lot. I think his lines are like, it'll be like, you know, a note of regret or whatever. Like it's so funny. And then, but when Richard is running away, during Men's Folly, he goes, I'll send them for you. Like as if he's going to get away. The one man who is bleeding out is going to be able to like call back for a helicopter is so funny.
Yeah.
He's
says, like, being away. I'll send for you in the morning, as soon as possible. He says in the morning, like he's waiting. Like what? This is crazy and so ridiculous.
I don't know why I found this funny, but when they were dunking the angel investor in the water, like and the business bros, like one of them says, he kept you open during COVID.
There
are several of us in the theater who just found that ridiculous, like just hilarious. But lots of little lines everywhere.
I really like Rob Yang. Rob Yang plays Bryce, I believe, one of the three, the guy who says the COVID line. He was also he's been in Succession and a bunch of other stuff. I really like him. I'd like to see him in more stuff.
So he's the best of the three bros?
I think so.
Arturo Castro, it was in Broad City and was also in Narcos. And he played fake Pablo Escobar in Weird. I like that I had to qualify that it was fake Pablo Escobar.
Right, because that movie is, there's a lot of layers there. But Rob Yang was great. I think I mean, was there anyone else? I'm trying to remember. I know there's someone I'm missing.
Lillian Bloom, also the actress, but that's Janet McTeer. I talked about how much I liked Ted being a little like a sycophant, but when she thinks that it's all for them, I also thought that was good.
And she's and, like, laughing.
Yeah, she's like, it's all fake. Like, they cut off his finger as a joke just for us. Like, this is the whole thing. I thought was like pretty funny. Cause like I think earlier in the movie, you do wonder like, okay, is anybody else in on it? Like, who is it? Are they actually going to kill anybody?
Right? Ted turns around to one of the other guests. Like, the acting is amazing. Like, so the actor is like, what are you talking about? We're all going to die.
I think he tells the actor. I think he says,
yes, exactly. It's like, what are you talking about? Yeah, I think the Janet McTeer laughs over some of the initial horror when it starts to really turn is really effective at just being, again, like super creepy, because you're like, oh, God, she doesn't even know. This is terrible. Is that going to make her survive? No, obviously not.
There does seem to be a point, and I have to kind of try to track it down on a rewatch, where everyone seems resigned to, okay, we're all going to die.
That's when Margot's gonna leave, when she's leaving and she looks and it's actually like Judith Light.
Judith
who kind of gives the like,
oh yeah,
you go, and they're all just, they don't do anything, right? They all stay.
Yeah. They but to that point, I mean, first, that scene got me a little emotional. Like the idea of like, and I think it's obviously because it's Judith Light, and you kind of bring sometimes when an actor that you've seen for so long, they kind of bring the gravity of all their other performances, and you kind of like do some emotional lifting for them. But I got like very briefly emotional when she like gave like, get out of here. Just like the idea of like an elder like trying to help like this new generation, like you might be the only one, just get out of here, don't think about us. It was like very like oddly moving.
So what I was gonna ask Ariel and Kurt are there any Oscar nods for this movie? Is there anything in here? I actually think Ralph Fiennes as Slowick could earn one, maybe Anya Taylor-Joy. I don't think Nicholas Hoult gets one, but no. If he got one, I'd be like, yeah, cool. I do think like between Hong Chau and gosh, I cannot remember her name, but the lady from Triangle of Sadness, I feel like between the two of them, I need a movie with the two of them and then for it to get every Oscar in existence. I think writing probably whatever screenplay it could get, but yeah.
I think that's about it. Anya Taylor-Joy. I like I said, I think Hong Chau is also was my probably my favorite character, but I don't think there's going to be an Oscar nod there. It's unfortunate that there's not an Oscar for Best Ensemble. Because I think there are lots of different pieces to this that individually didn't work as good as they did together. So I'm waiting for someone to correct me that there is a Best Ensemble Oscar. I'm pretty sure
the film festivals do ensemble.
Like SAG. They do that for like SAG. Okay. It's like
I do agree. It's kind of a missing thing. My Policeman won it at TIFF, which is like a joke. Considering that both
I think you said My Policeman, which would be like a much better title.
Yeah, it would actually. It's actually My Policeman.
We didn't really talk about even like Nicholas Hoult's character takes his own life. After the horrible dish, but we don't really, what do you think that it was that, I mean, what we do hear is, his chef is about to say, he's like, that was so, and you see the look of hope on Nicholas's face, and they said bad, and it kind of completely deflates, but then he says something to him that he just kind of wanders into the back and
whispers something.
Yeah.
And I mean, you have to believe, you take into account again that they've been talking, that he actually got to like ostensibly DM with his like favorite this person that he worships for like months and months, and he had like complete power over him. So, you know, for him to, it clearly wouldn't have taken much, unfortunately, for him to say and direct him. I think probably said what you should do is XYZ, take off your tie and, you know, hurt yourself.
I think one of the things, so there's, I feel like the movie gives us sort of like, in a lot of ways, it gives us the like, the reason why somebody is sort of supposed to be there, or at least you can understand why like, they end up like being killed, but also each person has this individual thing with Slowick as to why he wants specifically them to be there. And so I think the bigger grievance that Tyler pulls is bringing Margo to this thing that he knows she'll die. But actually why Slowik wants him to die is because he believes he is ruining the art of being a chef by being this foodie who can he has the tea, has the palate cleanser, and he names the ingredient. I don't remember what the ingredient was.
Bergamot.
Right. And he's like, yeah, bergamot. Like he like looks at it with like such disdain, right?
It was bergamot,
that he's he's like, you like by having all of these things that you do by going and taking pictures and all of this stuff, you're like, you're ruining the what is like beautiful about creating food. And so I actually think like he's much more concerned with like the fact that Tyler does that much more so than he is. And so imagine that like this person you look up to is also telling you you're ruining it for like yeah, for him and for everyone
and for me more importantly. Yeah.
Yes. So I think that's what drives him to go and ultimately hang himself.
Yeah. Slowik has a lot of control over him. And now I'm remembering exactly what I want to say before. So when Slowik says that he mentions towards the end, like you all probably could have gotten away had you tried a little bit harder.
Right.
Like what is the thing that's keeping you here? Why is it that you actually allowed this to happen to you in a sense, right? They tried to arguably at different times get away in different ways, but like they never bum rushed as a group. Like there are things that you can think of in the extreme that maybe could have worked. And he's getting at like the power dynamic here and like the power that he has and the power, you know, in these contexts that we as like a society kind of decide like what's okay and what's not okay, but it's all just pretend.
Yeah, 100%.
It's pretty fascinating. But he's a monster. So that's
maybe I like it. Maybe I like it more after thinking about it. I don't know. It's just for me. I think that like I didn't know it was a comedy per se. I thought it would be funny, but not that it would be completely a comedy. I did think it was like I thought it would to a degree have a little bit more. I think what I prefer a little bit more in a movie most times is that it's not trying to that everybody. I guess the movie does it that like. In the realm of the movie, everything is pretty serious, right? Like even when they're putting on s'more costumes, they're all like taking it seriously. But I don't know. There's a level to which it's a little like it's comedy. It's very clearly comedy, much more than like this is like a horror thriller movie with some comedy in it. Because every good drama has comedy in it, and so this much more leans on the comedy. But I still think it's excellent, and will certainly be in. You know, at least my top 20 movies of the year.
I hope it doesn't discourage people from trying tasting menus.
I think so. I think it will.
I got dragged. Yeah, I got dragged to one this summer by a friend, and I had a very pleasant experience. Yeah. And no one died.
Yeah, it's like I know that lots of the escape room movies out there poisoned people against like they think that all escape rooms are scary. I'm hoping people come out of this movie not thinking that all tasting menu experiences are scary.
Yeah, I did an escape room this summer, and it was set as you're sneaking into the classroom because you have a school test. So you had to sneak in to find the test exam answers. Not scary, at all.
Yeah. No, not scary at all, but very anxiety-inducing, arguably.
Not when you're not in school anymore.
Yeah, no, I mean, the anxiety dreams that you get, you know.
Yeah, fair enough.
One of the I was actually getting kind of faint echoes of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory from this.
Oh,
In terms of like, you know, four naughty guests, you know, naughty little children left. Sort of.
Hey, you know what's coming next year, Kurt?
Actually, I don't.
Wonka.
Timothy Chalamet himself. Yeah. Oh, I think he made this movie too many times.
He's doing a cannibal movie and then going to play Willy Wonka. And personally, I respect that.
Yeah. What a journey.
Yeah.
Talk about food from and he goes. It's like yes, he's going from the main course, human flesh, to dessert. Willy Wonka chocolate.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go. Any other courses that we need to talk about? Do we think that they'll open another restaurant where the explosion site is?
So,
like Jurassic Park?
Exactly.
Margo getting away is interesting because, like, is there sequel potential for this movie in terms of it? Obviously, you obviously recast. I guess you could do, you can do like any of them. Didn't actually burn, right? Like Ralph Fiennes is like very clearly like Solik is clearly in the middle of the fire. Elsa gets like stabbed in the neck. Yeah. But like any of the anyway, I do think there's like is there a world where like Anya Taylor-Joy is in a sequel where she goes and she's like, oh my god, I'm like I've met another madman, and it's about something. Is it like an art exhibit? Is it like Elon Musk? You know, yeah, like Elon Musk. Yeah, whatever it is that's like not food. Like, is there a world where she's like, oh my god, I, you know, again these like maniacal genius madmen? Like, is there room for a sequel?
So like the Knives Outification of Anya Taylor-Joy, yes, as a takedowner of evil tyrants.
Yes, yes. People who like perceive themselves to have genius. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm into it. That's hero we deserve.
Oh. Right? Because you could see it starting to be like Glass Onion had, where it's like they've cast, you know, or like White Lotus, even like Aubrey Plaza's in the you know, it's gonna be in the menu too. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because this takes me back years. Some of the listeners may remember the Whodunit reality TV series.
Yes.
There were two books, Whodunit novels. And in both of the novels, the premise was that the main character, Giles the Butler, keeps taking jobs at houses where people want to kill everybody. So this conversation is very much reminding me of that. It's like, this is the third house I've worked in where a mad killer wants to, you know, to keep, trap everybody on the premises. Well,
she's an escort, right? So she gets like invited to like an art show, and it's like, oh, we're all trapped in the art show, and it's like a horror, like, you know, we're all gonna die because, you know, for whatever like grievances this like famous artist has. I could see it.
Sounds like a backdoor pilot to this movie.
That's right.
But wouldn't it be the menu? Yeah. Would it be the exhibit?
The exhibit, or yeah, what, exhibit. Yeah. Yeah.
A house people. This has been super fun. I think we've talked about the menu enough. I'm not as hungry as I was at the beginning. Mm. So that's good news.
Bless you, better. There are a lot of movies out right now. Yeah. Like a lot of
too movies. Too many. It's like, what if you were looking at a menu of movies that you needed to see, but you only had a limited amount of time? And that's what this is like. But it's been super fun. Kurt, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you, look for you, listen to you?
Ironically, if you want to see my pictures of food, which I do post a lot, you can find me at Kurt Clark with two C's on Instagram. And, you know, I think it's pretty much the same handle on all social media platforms. So, but yeah, Instagram is where I post my pictures of escape rooms and food, ironically.
Love it. Very, very on brand. What about you, Grace?
I'm on Twitter at High From Grace, as long as Twitter is around, podcasting about a few things. So 1899 with you, Ariel, and Rich, The Crown, talking about that with Shannon Gus, and Roll Call, a board game show over on Rob as a Podcast. You can watch the replays on YouTube or Twitch, and we'll have a new announcement for what we're doing in November later. Yeah, what about you, Ariel?
Incredible stuff. I am also on Twitter at That Other Ariel. I am, like you said, covering 1899 with you and Rich, also covering The White Lotus season 2. We're halfway through season 2 and trying to figure out that mystery with my co-host Dr. Amanda. That's been super fun. That's it from here. I think it's time that we pack up our knives and go.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back next week. Bye.